Well, Beavis, Mark Diaz is still at it. He's done 82 episodes and no one is listening. What a loser. Actually, Beavis, you know, maybe there's something noble about keeping up with something, continuing to try even if you never get noticed. You think? No, haha. I'm just kidding. Mark D is still a dumbass. Yeah, a dumbass. Well, thank you again, Beavis and Butthead, and as my New Zealand trainer used to say, welcome to my world. And shit, speaking of welcome to my world, all roads lead back to my beloved band, The Muffs, with the late, great Kim Shattuck. She's buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale. I'll have to check that out now that I'm in Los Angeles. Her songs have brought me so much joy over the years. I love the song Outer Space from the 1997 album Happy Birthday to Me. Have I sung this before? It's certainly possible. It's kind of getting to the point where, like the character Leonard in the movie Memento, I have to start putting post-its around of all the things I've mentioned on this podcast. And of course, I need to get some tattoos, including Remember Stacy Keach. Memento fans will get that reference, and if you're not a Memento fan, then become one, goddammit. Anyway, here's some of the Muffs song, Outer Space. Welcome to my world now, by myself, but I don't care. If you think I'm funny, talk to me when I'm not there. You won't get a lot out of me. I really want you to see that I'm wasting away in a fantasy. Do you know where I am? I really want you to. I'm here in outer space. Yeah, I'm here in outer space.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, before we get started, let's mention the passing of Val Kilmer, who died of pneumonia at the age of 65. He had also suffered from throat cancer, which the large majority of cases are from HPV, which is transmitted sexually. Michael Douglas famously revealed his throat cancer was due to HPV. But Val Kilmer had been a fairly heavy smoker in the past, so who knows? And zero judgment, man. It sucks that sexual activity can also kill us. What a bum deal that is. Luckily, lately, no one will sleep with me, so I'm good for now. And I'm not even talking about sex. No one will literally even sleep with me. I'm just kidding. But interestingly, Val Kilmer was also a Christian Scientist, which is a 19th century American movement that teaches that diseases are caused by the mind, and prayer can heal disease. Now, prayer can't hurt, I'm sure of that, but cure? That's a bridge too far, I think. And after finding out he had throat cancer, Val Kilmer kind of delayed medical treatment. But he eventually did get help, including a tracheotomy followed by chemotherapy and radiation. And briefly, the Christian Scientist Church was founded in 1879 by Mary Baker Eddy, and her beliefs were criticized sharply and deftly by the one and only Mark Twain. Val Kilmer was interested in Mary Baker Eddy and also Mark Twain, and he developed a long-running stage show about the feud between the two, which was called Citizen Twain. There was also a 90-minute film of the play from 2017 called Cinema Twain. I remember back in the day seeing advertisements for Val Kilmer's stage show. I should have went and seen it, but oh well. Now, Val Kilmer was quite a bit older than me, but to me, since I grew up on his movies, he kind of seemed like we were from the same era, so his death was weirdly affecting. I remember when I was growing up, different celebrities would die, and my dad would be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. You know, Lee Marvin died, or Frank Sinatra, or whatever. It's weird when those people start dying that were like, you know, formative figures in your life. And since I've always been obsessed with movies, I can't help but think back of all the times I've seen a Val Kilmer movie. I can kind of trace Val Kilmer movies from when I was a kid into adulthood. So let's mention a few movies. And I always loved Val Kilmer's first movie from 1984, Top Secret, which is a musical comedy spoof directed by the Airplane team of Jim Abrahams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker. It's ridiculous. A lot of sight gags, stupidity, just dumb fun. It's also got Omar Sharif and my man Peter Cushing. He memorably plays a character who we see holding a magnifying glass by his eye, so it like looks weirdly enlarged. And then when he removes the magnifying glass, we see his eye actually looks that way. It's a funny-ass great gag. And Val Kilmer plays a rock star named Nick Rivers. His dad thought of his name while shaving, get it? And in the opening credits, he's singing the song Skeet Surfing, which, yes, has a bunch of young people on the beach, and people are surfing while also skeet shooting. And if that sounds like it's up your alley, watch this movie ASAP. And a year later was 1985's Real Genius, with Val Kilmer as a college genius, there we go, who takes an awkward teenage prodigy under his wing. I was admittedly really late to the party in seeing Real Genius for some reason, but I finally watched it maybe 5 years ago and just thought it was funny as hell. The great actor John Grise, a.k.a. Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, plays Laszlo, a reclusive student who lives in the closet. But the character that absolutely cracked me up is the conniving teacher's pet Kent, played by Robert Prescott. Val Kilmer and his friends find a way to transmit a radio transmitter into Kent's braces, and they convince Kent that he's receiving messages from God. And at one point they tell him, "Think about what you've done, and from now on, stop playing with yourself." So moving on here, this won't be an exhaustive review of Val Kilmer movies, but here's a few other ones that stood out to me. The 1986 TV movie The Murders in the Rue Morgue, with Val Kilmer as a young man who assists a detective in solving a series of murders. The detective in the movie and the book by Edgar Allan Poe is Auguste Dupin, and he is played by, yes, you knew it, George C. Scott. And what can I say? George C. Scott is awesome in this, and Val Kilmer is kind of likable, too. And, of course, the previously mentioned noir from 1989, Kill Me Again, directed by John Dahl, is just one of my favorites, and it features Val Kilmer in a great prime Michael Madsen, kind of before he fell apart, Joanne Whaley Kilmer, Val's then-wife. They met on the set of Willow. They had a couple kids together, and they remained, you know, pretty friendly until Val's end. And, of course, Val Kilmer was so good and strangely touching in Michael Mann's 1995 movie Heat, my man Buckley's favorite movie, not to be confused with the also completely fun 1986 film Heat with Mr. Toupet himself, Burt Reynolds. And this isn't a great film, but I always had a sweet spot for DJ Caruso's The Salton Sea from 2002, where Val Kilmer plays a trumpeter whose wife is murdered and he gets involved with a gang of speed freaks and criminals. It's a little pretentious and overwrought. Kilmer is pretty understated in it. It's worth watching if only for Vincent D'Onofrio's character Pooh Bear. He wears a fake nose because he's destroyed his nose through the use of drugs. Shades of Artie Lang there. David Mamet's 2004 Spartan is very Mamet, with some completely implausible dialogue, but it's worth watching, with Val Kilmer as a Secret Service agent who gets mixed up in a conspiracy. It's also got a young Kristen Bell as our kidnap victim, and Al Bundy himself, Ed O'Neill. And just drop everything and go watch Shane Black's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang from 2005, again previously mentioned, but it's got Robert Downey Jr. as an actor who teams up with a Hollywood detective played by Val Kilmer to research a role. Val Kilmer is more relaxed and goofy in this role, and it's one of his best. I worship Shane Black, so what can I say? It's also got Michelle Monaghan, who I love. Val Kilmer was reported to be a bit demanding and difficult at times, but sometimes the best actors are like that. And you could tell he would really get into roles and he would do his homework, much like Vincent D'Onofrio. I remember I had an acting class with Vincent D'Onofrio and he went over his process of preparing for a role and it was like, holy shit. And rule number one, know your lines, like well enough that you could just say one of them after the other at full speed. Once you know the lines back and forth, then you work on the character and how to say them. But so often in acting class, someone would be doing a scene, and my teacher would be like, "You don't know the fucking lines." And my performances may have been occasionally bad, but I always tried to know my lines. Val Kilmer's life was marked by tragedy, however, and he had a kind of aloneness or sadness to him. Before he went to Juilliard to study acting in his teens, his younger brother Wesley, who was epileptic, drowned in a hot tub while having a seizure. This scarred Val Kilmer, and Val Kilmer always had that kind of unspoken heaviness about him. So anyway, Val, you won't be forgotten. You were the real deal. Yes, maybe you were a pain at times, but aren't we all sometimes? I mean, we're all working on ourselves where we should be, whether rich or poor, celebrity or unknown. Okay, so I moved to Los Angeles a week ago. My apartment seems okay, even though I had to break one of my cardinal rules. I'm not on the top floor of the apartment, but so far it seems fairly quiet. And like the Sunnyvale apartment, my parking spot here totally sucks. And while this apartment has central AC, well, wouldn't you know, they have to fix it. It seems like they could have figured that out before I moved in, but oh well, sometimes our work ethic sucks. But they did give me a portable AC, which is loud as shit, which I'm okay with. I also have a white noise machine, so when I go to bed, it's cold as shit, and all of my stuff is so noisy that it would drown out the demolition of a nearby building. But as always, when I move, I'm slightly freaking out. And my mom and I are kind of unspokenly waiting for that moment when I crack up again. I mean, it happens once or twice or thrice a year, but moving is always an instigator. Speaking of instigation, I went on a couple dates with a girl whose email was Miss Instigate, M-I-S-S, Instigate. She was kind of a train wreck, but pretty cute. So anyway, those last few days before I moved down from my mom's, I didn't drink. And I had intended on not drinking for a bit in Los Angeles, but I was anxious during my first week of work, so I did drink a bit. Work in progress. But flashing back a week, when I first moved in, I didn't feel like drinking, but I was pretty on edge, so I needed something. So I drove 3 minutes to the weed store nearby and bought a fairly low-potency THC drink and a 100-milligram edible. And whenever I get high is when I generally come up with little movie scenes or bits of dialogue. Sometimes they're pretty good, sometimes not, but what the hell. Okay, here's one. Picture a Jeff Bridges Lebowski-type dude puffing on a joint speaking with his nephew who's just graduating college. His nephew says, "Man, it's like things are going well. I graduated, but I'm just kind of not happy, you know?" And Jeff Bridges says, "You know what the truth is? Sometimes life just sucks. Sometimes it just fucking sucks." That one's not so great, but here's another Jeff Bridges quote. So him and his dumb shit fuckhead brother are planning a robbery with some other guys. And Jeff Bridges says to his brother, "Now look, man, for the next month or so until we pull this off, I need you to keep it together, okay? No booze, no pills." The brother says, yeah, no problem. And Jeff Bridges says, "I'm serious, man. Do not fuck this up." Okay, here's one. A guy is looking at a big portrait of himself on the wall. A woman comes up next to him and he gestures to the painting and says, "What can I say? I'm just drawn to myself." And of course, we need a Jack Nicholson style quote in here. Picture an older Jack Nicholson and maybe Jessica Lange. They haven't seen each other for 30 years, and Jack is at Jessica's longtime husband's funeral, whose name was Charlie. So Jack says, "I'm so sorry. Charlie was a great guy, really." Jessica says, "Thanks. My God, I haven't seen you for so long. What about you? Did you ever settle down with someone or find the love of your life?" And Jack takes Jessica's hand and he says, "Well, there was one special woman." And Jack gestures to her wedding ring and then says, "But she was already taken." I don't know, I kind of like that one. But briefly, speaking of edibles, they sell these little tiny gelatin candies that are fucking teeny. And it's like, okay, 1/2 of 1 millimeter is 10 milligrams, and then you end up slowly eating the whole fucking thing, and like an hour later, it hits you. And every time, I can almost hear Richard Pryor saying in my voice, "God damn, motherfucker, you are high." So anyway, let's picture Dana Carvey as Johnny Carson speaking with Phil Hartman as Ed McMahon. "Okay, well, listen, Ed, I ate a little brownie last night. It was called Indica. It was an Indica brownie. Or as the kids say, Inda couch. Inda couch. You've been Inda couch before, haven't you, Ed?" And then Ed says, "Oh, yes, sir. Nightly." And weird, does this ever happen to you? Whenever I'm doing Dana Carvey as Johnny Carson, it slowly becomes Billy Crystal doing Sammy Davis Jr. It's like, okay, well, Ed, I did not know that. I mean, it's kooky, it's crazy. And the Candyman makes everything he bakes satisfying and delicious. Talk about your childhood wishes. You can even eat the dishes. And Ed says, "Oh, yes, sir, I've eaten the dishes." So anyway, that's about it for this week. Sometimes I think, I don't have many listeners. And then I remember, dude, no one knows about this podcast, and it's weird as shit, as niche as it gets. And plus, all those earlier episodes had no guitar when you sang, which was likely dreadful to listen to. But, you know, there's plenty of good stuff out there that's under the radar. And I'm not saying my stuff is any good. I think it's great, by the way. Just kidding. But at least it's interesting and personal. I mean, there ain't no artificial intelligence on the planet that could make this stupid shit up. Sam Altman, you'll never get me. But anyway, I read a great inspiring quote from a documentary review in the paper the other day. The movie is about some artists who did a little project where they created and lived in an apartment they made nestled in a shopping mall in Providence, Rhode Island. The artists were kind of commenting on the hypocrisy of the city officials and developers of the mall, which was supposedly meant to address urban decay, but was really going to be focused on the more affluent residents of the city. So in a way, the artists created an apartment that kind of became art. And can an apartment be art? Well, you can't spell apartment without art. But hell yes, I think art, you know, isn't necessarily tangible. And there's tons of art out there that maybe three people have seen, or only one person, the creator of that art. But anyway, the end of this review has a great little section, just an absolute nugget. Art doesn't have to be in a museum to be valuable. It doesn't have to be ownable, repeatable, or make sense to everyone. If it changes a few lives, then it's changed the world.